mine up here for now, but when I'm done, I'll just put yours up. You're going to get a second, right?
Yes.
Okay. By the way, I'm Lance. Nice to meet
okay.
you.
I'm Gerda from the Netherlands. Yes. Okay. And what I the next slide. Then
I think if you use the arrows, or you could also, I think, oh no, maybe not, you can't do it from there. So either up and down arrows, or the space bar goes down. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah. This is yours. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that seems to work.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Hi. We'll be talking about involuntary outpatient treatment.
I'm not going to focus on that much in the short time that I have. We only have 15 minutes apiece, but
okay, sure.
I'm happy to talk about it. If you want to ask me a question about that,
have you had any experience with that?
Well, not direct experience, but I've looked at the laws, and I'm familiar with some of the approaches that are taken.
Yeah, we're trying to put that into the law.
Okay. Oh, okay, great.
Okay.
All right, yeah, well, I'll be happy to talk to you about that.
Okay, thanks.
All right, sure. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Cheryl Easley. I'm president-elect of the APHA, and I'm also a member of the public health nursing section. For many years, since I've been a part of this organization, I've been working with the International Human Rights Committee. And through that committee and the work, I'm sorry, can you hear me now? Is that better? Okay. Through my work with the International Human Rights Committee, and the work that my sister Carol Easley Allen did with that committee, we met some wonderful colleagues who have a tremendous interest in the human rights of prisoners. Corey Weinstein is one that's sitting back there. And certainly, I think Carol said back in 1999, she met Dr. Alex Gatherer from Oxford, who has come several times to the American Public Health Association meetings, has presented sessions for us, and has been really quite active in our work with human rights in prisons. This past year, at the end of the meeting, we were able to accompany Dr. Gatherer, Dr. Weinstein, and some other members of the Human Rights Committee to a meeting with PAHO. Remember, we met in Washington last year, and Dr. Gatherer has been doing some work with WHO and in health and prisons, and we wanted to talk with the people at PAHO about how that work could be extended. And I promised at that time that I would try to find a venue for that effort to be presented at this meeting, and was able to get this session. And I have to give all credit to Dr. Gatherer for organizing the wonderful panel of international scholars who will be talking to you this afternoon about mental health, human rights, and involuntary detention in the Americas. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a great pleasure to be here. My name is Lance Gable. I am an assistant professor of law at Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan. And I'm also a scholar with the Center for Law and the Public's Health at Georgetown and Johns Hopkins Universities. I am a substitute today. Those of you who came today expecting to see Javier Vasquez, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but Javier had an unavoidable conflict today, and I'm standing as best as I can in his shoes today. And so, as a result of that, I'm going to be, in a de facto way, representing the Pan American Health Organization. Now, I don't work for the Pan American Health Organization. I have to disclaim at the beginning that anything I say should not be taken as an official position of the Pan American Health Organization. But what I am going to talk about are some issues related to mental health, human rights, and involuntary detention in the Americas, and I'm going to try to describe some of the work that PAHO has been doing in this area, and also to describe some of the ways that human rights law can be used to protect mental health in an institutional setting, and to provide some evidence that's been obtained from workshops that have been held throughout the Western Hemisphere over the last several years. And so, with that in mind, I'd like to begin. And generally, I'm going to start by talking about some of the overarching human rights concerns that arise when persons with mental disabilities are confined in institutional settings. This is a process that is still very common in many countries around the world to have people with serious mental disabilities treated and involuntarily detained in institutional settings. As the subsequent speakers will be addressing when they talk about the prison setting in particular, but in institutional settings, there is an unfortunate tradition of a lack of respect for human rights protections. And people very often face abuse in prisons and in psychiatric facilities when they're involuntarily confined. And this is an issue that that not only needs to receive a great deal of attention, but also we can look to international human rights laws and international human rights principles to try to give us guidance on how to avoid these types of abuses. I'm going to talk in particular about how international human rights law applies to involuntary treatment and involuntary detention in the Americas, and I'm going to outline some of the ongoing efforts by PAHO to try to address these abuses. When we talk about mental health and human rights, what we're really talking about is the culmination of two of the great social movements of the last 60 years. We're about to reach the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the human rights movement has been a very profound social movement that's been exemplified in the law, that causes us to recognize the inherent worth of every individual and the fact that every person has inherent rights, even if they're in an institutional setting, even if they're in a prison. And unfortunately, though, this existence of this strong human rights protection is often ignored, or often countries fail to uphold these rights in institutions. We also have the efforts of the disability rights movement, which has seized upon much of the language and the themes of the human rights movement to advocate, in particular, for the rights of persons with disabilities. And in the context of mental disabilities, it's been an even more difficult struggle at times. Very often, people with mental disabilities are extremely marginalized in society. They're stigmatized and they're excluded from many societal activities. And if their mental disability is serious enough, very often they find themselves in an institution. There's been a great movement away from institutions over the past 30 to 40 years with the discovery of effective psychotropic drugs that allowed people to live more easily in the community. But institutions persist, and even in the community settings, often human rights abuses can continue to occur. And so these movements have had great success, but there still are many ongoing problems that persist. When we look at the Americas, we see that not only do human rights abuses continue to occur with regularity, there's a decent amount of evidence backing this up, but also that when you look at the laws that are in place in these countries, disability laws, laws that apply to mental health services, and laws that apply to the civil and criminal system in these countries, very often these laws fail to take into account human rights principles. Often these laws are older laws that were drafted either prior to the human rights revolution or have just failed to take it into account into the legal structure. Beyond the legal structure, we see in actual practice, in the way that orders are issued by judges and the way that treatment is provided or maybe not provided in institutional settings, we see that human rights principles are not being followed at those levels either. And some of this is a lack of knowledge among people who are making these decisions. Some of it is due to the fact that the participation of persons with mental disabilities in policymaking is greatly constrained in most of these countries. Just very briefly, when we're talking about mental health conditions, the WHO estimates that 450 million people around the world have mental, neurological, or behavioral health problems. And when we look at how law has been applied in this context, 64% of countries around the world do not have mental health legislation, or they have legislation that's older than 10 years, which in most cases does not take into account human rights protections. We also see when we look at the Americas that certain types of mental disabilities are fairly prevalent. You see a 1% prevalence rate of non-affective psychosis, including schizophrenia, in Latin America and the Caribbean. Major depression is close to 5% prevalence, and alcohol abuse is above 5%. So there were two separate studies that I'm going to be talking about today. To try to address some of these issues in the context of involuntary detention. One is a legal analysis that was done by myself, by Javier Vasquez, and a couple of other people in conjunction with the Pan American Health Organization to look at how the laws that relate to mental health in many of the countries in the Americas, how well these laws are incorporating human rights principles. And beyond that, what international and regional human rights principles can be applied in these circumstances. So in other words, which international instruments are relevant, and which sections of those instruments apply to mental health in an institutional setting. And then separately, PAHO has conducted a series of workshops, not only to educate and train government officials and members of the public in different countries through Latin America and the Caribbean about the application of human rights protections to persons with mental disabilities, but they've also, through these workshops, collected a significant amount of information that allows for some amount of evidence into what's going on the ground in these countries and allows us a window into some abuses that are continuing to perpetuate themselves in institutional settings. And this is an ongoing analysis, so I don't have a lot of hard data to share with you today, but I am going to talk about some of the major themes that we're discovering through this work. So the applicable international instruments, very quickly, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights at the international level are certainly relevant to countries in the Americas. I want to point out the new Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which actually just went into force earlier this year, which provides some substantial new protections for persons with mental disabilities, including those that are being treated or detained in an institutional setting. The MI principles, which have been around since 1991, are also a very influential UN guidance document about how we can employ human rights protections in an institutional setting when people are institutionalized for mental health reasons. Specific to the Americas, there are a couple of regional human rights instruments that are relevant. There is the American Convention on Human Rights, which explicitly provides protection for persons with mental disabilities. There's the additional protocol to that convention. Articles 10 and 18, which I mentioned up here, specifically address the right to health and the right to prevention of discrimination against persons with disabilities. And finally, there's the Inter-American Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Persons with Disabilities. So these are our foundational, applicable international documents. What we found when we looked at the legal structures in many of these countries is that, for the most part, national laws that specifically addressed mental health, the mental health laws in these countries, did not employ human rights frameworks, and they rarely put in appropriate due process protections for people who are being admitted into institutions. And remember that for the most part, people who are being admitted into psychiatric institutions are being admitted through a judicial order. Sometimes there's a consultation with a mental health professional, but sometimes there isn't. And that's problematic if judges are committing people involuntarily without a medical justification for doing so. And we find that in many of these laws, there's also a complete lack of consideration of these due process principles. But there are some piecemeal protections that are in place in some countries within their disability laws, their public health laws, criminal law, family law, other areas of law that might provide protections such as rules about guardianship or rules about criminal responsibility that might apply to someone with a severe mental disability. But even those laws don't typically address the types of due process protections, provide the types of due process protections for admission and ongoing detention. We also see that a lot of countries in their constitutions at least have language that respects human rights principles, that references human rights principles. But often these constitutional provisions are not translated. They're not enforced at any kind of practical level. So in our study, what we determined was there were four major areas of concern with regard to human rights and mental health. And as you see here, the top two areas, which I have bolded, although you can't really tell it's bolded on that screen, admission to and detention in psychiatric facilities and conditions of confinement. Those are the two that I'm going to focus on for the remainder of the talk today. The other two are no less important, protection of civil rights and protection of access to mental health care. But for purposes of this discussion, admission and detention in psychiatric facilities. There are human rights issues and potential human rights abuses at every stage of the process, at the point in the process when a person is admitted to a psychiatric facility, at the point in the process when they're assessed and there's a determination made whether or not they're going to remain in that facility. whether they're going to undergo treatment and what type of treatment, and also whether or not there's periodic review of the detention. So when we look at this particular issue, the issue of procedural and substantive due process, are people being admitted with good cause? Are the correct procedures being put into place to make sure that people are not admitted to an institution inappropriately? We see that some of these international provisions address these issues directly. So I've listed a few of them up here. The MI Principle Number 16, for example, provides that a person may only be admitted involuntarily to a psychiatric facility if there's a serious likelihood of imminent harm to that person or other individuals, and the failure to admit or retain this person is likely to lead to a serious deterioration in his or her condition. Now, the new Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities has also addressed this issue in several provisions that provide for effective access to justice and prohibit arbitrary confinement, rights to liberty, rights to freedom of movement. And so one thing I will point out, though, is that these provisions that I'm referring to here are not provisions that have been adopted by the courts in these countries. The courts aren't referencing these provisions, although my point, my contention here is that they should be. And there's ample language in the and ample applicability of these instruments to not only the Inter-American Commission and Court on Human Rights, who can apply the American Convention on Human Rights, but also countries are bound by these provisions. Their countries have signed them and ratified them, and particularly the CRPD, which has just gone into effect. And these standards can be applied in a much more systematic way and consistent way. So just to quickly run through a couple more primary issues here, because I know my time is short. The issue of right to a fair and timely review of detention by an impartial and independent tribunal is supported by these documents, these international human rights instruments. Also, periodic review of detention. It's very important that a person who's put in an institutional setting and involuntarily detained receive periodic review to ensure that their ongoing detention is actually necessary. These people are not being punished for committing a crime. These people are there because there's been an assessment made that they pose a danger to themselves or others. And in that kind of situation, periodic review must be done to ensure that someone is not kept in a detention-type circumstance longer than is necessary. Related to this, and I'm not going to go into too much detail in this presentation, but is the movement towards community treatment. And this obviously is preferable in almost all circumstances. This is preferable from a human rights perspective, because if you can provide a person with treatment in the community, there's no justification to keep them in an institutional setting. Okay, I want to also share with you a couple of things that came out of these workshops. The PAHO workshops were able to meet with people at all levels of society, government officials, judges, legislators, consumers of mental health services, and other groups as well. And what was consistently the consistent results of these conversations were identifications of areas where due process protections were not being provided in multiple countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. And so we see that many countries do not have legally established mechanisms for admission into psychiatric facilities or review of detention, that the people implementing these decisions, judges, magistrates, police, and corrections officers, do not understand their obligations under international human rights standards, and also in the prison context, the due process protections are no better than in the in many of the psychiatric institutions. With regard to conditions of confinement, there are some serious human rights abuses that have gone on throughout many of these countries over the years with regard to inappropriate conditions, poor ventilation, poor lighting, poor sanitation, lack of access to health care, both physical and mental health services, people being placed in solitary confinement or in inappropriate restraints, not because it was needed to protect others, but because it was more convenient for the people who were supervising those who were in these facilities. A failure to protect people in these institutions against abuse by other patients or other prisoners, depending on the institution. And combined, many of this appalling condition results in inhuman and degrading treatment, all of which are prohibited under multiple international human rights documents. I'm not going to go through the specifics because of time constraints, but I will say that in the workshop interviews, there also were many of the same types of conditions were identified. Deplorable living conditions, overcrowding, a lack of therapy, occupational and recreational therapy, inappropriate use of physical restraints, isolation, undocumented patients, which is a significant problem in a psychiatric institution, because it's very hard to protect someone's human rights if you don't know they're even there. And so I want to just end with a couple of thoughts about what Pan American Health Organization has been engaged in. In addition to these workshops, which I've already mentioned, which have engaged in training of all sectors of society, there have been a number of efforts where experts from the Pan American Health Organization have been collaborating directly with government officials to try to engage in law reform, to formulate new policies related to incorporating a human rights approach, human rights-based approach, into mental health services, both in institutions and in the community, trying to strengthen the resources available to those who enforce these policies, ombudspersons in different countries. There have been some efforts where PAHO has provided technical collaboration on law reform to strengthen the national level legal infrastructure, which I think is a very important step because having these international standards are important, but if they truly want to be enforceable, we need to make sure that national level legal provisions actually mirror these human rights standards and make them more directly enforceable, so they can be enforced proactively rather than retroactively in a lawsuit. So another thing that's been going on is that PAHO has engaged in technical collaboration with the Inter-American Commission and Court on Human Rights to implement precautionary measures. There was a case where there were quite a number of I shouldn't call them prisoners, but they essentially were prisoners. They were patients in a psychiatric facility in Paraguay who had been living in deplorable conditions for years, had not been receiving any sort of mental health treatment, and were basically being warehoused in a facility. This came to light, and the Inter-American Commission intervened immediately, didn't wait for national level legal proceedings to go forward, and the Pan American Health Organization was able to be a technical consultant to help them quickly bring that facility into compliance with human rights requirements. And so, just to sum up, I'm going to skip ahead here. The final piece of this, and this is something that is ongoing and something that I think will be a helpful future step in this process, is to try to make sure that not only is education about how human rights apply to institutional settings and persons with mental disabilities being put forward through these training initiatives, but also to be collecting information, which PAHO is engaged in, to develop a set of qualitative human rights indicators related to mental health. And the idea would be that you would be able to measure how well a country is doing with respect to its human rights protections for persons with mental disabilities by establishing a set of indicators and then evaluating them systematically across different countries in the region. And this has already begun. There have been 10 preliminary indicators that have been identified. As these workshops are being conducted, information is being collected on all of these different indicators. And the hope is that this will be a very important tool, not only to help target resources and target information to improve human rights awareness and to help legislators write better laws, but also to allow for a measurement of progress, to show that when we do put in better and stronger human rights protections in the law or in practice, that this actually does lead to better health outcomes and a greater level of protection for people in institutions and across society. So I'm going to end there. And I just in conclusion, if you have any questions about the PAHO programs, I would urge you to contact Javier, because he knows them in much greater detail than I do. If you have any questions about some of the legal aspects of the things I've been talking about, feel free to contact me, and I look forward to meeting a lot of you later on in your questions. Thank you.
I introduce our next speaker, I must tell you that due to some unavoidable hitch in scheduling, I find that I'm also supposed to be presenting at another session during this time. So I'm going to run out a little bit later, but I will be back. And during my absence, Dr. Andrew Frazier has agreed to continue to moderate the panel. And our next speaker, I think, is Dr. Gerda de Hoff, who will talk to us about the view from Europe. And Dr. de Hoff is from the Netherlands.